Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by today. Well, I have some bad news to share with everybody. I took my test yesterday and failed by 5 points. I was so upset with myself. What a tedious test, though. Everything starts sounding exactly the same. There's 150 questions. You have like 2 hours and 45 minutes to do the test. I came to the realization that my testing skills weren't real good in the days when I took tests. Now they're even worse. So I found myself getting off task, even though you're in a secured room with a camera watching you. You can't take your watch, you can't take your purse, you can't take your phone, you can't take anything in the room with you. They have you pull up your sleeves, make sure you have no pockets. It was pretty strict. So I'm just going to take it again. I've invested a lot of time and energy and effort, so I was also told yesterday that 60% of the people that take this test fail it the first time. I was like, great. So leave it to me to be in the majority. But I will try again and keep everybody posted. I have something I want to talk about today, but I'm going to bring in Shell first so she can be in on the ground floor. Good morning.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
Doing good, sweetie. So when are you going to try to retake your test? Do they automatically receive you, or you have to let them know when you think you're ready?
No, I just have to go online and schedule a new appointment. And, you know, you can't usually get them right away, so I'll do that today. It'll probably be in anywhere from 4 to 5 days from now, but... It really is a very, 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 for me, as I said, I'm not into the facts and figures. My gift is common sense and the big picture. And right. When you have to get into all these little intricacies, it's not my strength, Shell. You know that about me already. But right. And some of it is so similar. You know, but the word consideration applies to policies, you know, life insurance policies. And then mm-hmm. The word consideration when you're talking about health insurance has a different meaning. So,
right.
you know, it's really, and there's 150 questions, and that's a lot. So towards the end, I'll be honest with you, I was like, oh, that sounds right. So I had really quit functioning during some part of that. I don't know. But they do give you your test results, but they don't give you the questions. They just show you how many questions were on that particular chapter of the book and how many you missed. So I think if I go in and do the ones that I was really, really weak in, then I may have a chance to get a passing grade. So that's what I'm going to do. But, you know, like I said to Spike yesterday, I said, "I, why is it whenever I do anything, I do it all at once? You know, I don't ever do one thing at a time. I'm in the middle of trying to sell this house, get another house. Spike's issues with the, you know, I mean, we're experimenting. He no longer can take in whole food at all. So I make all kinds of smoothies and stuff like that for him. And, of course, I'm worried about him. And it just seems like, you know, and that's, I'm sitting there, and I was very focused the first hour. And I that's when I missed the least amount of questions. But then I start, you know, my mind wanders. And I get myself thinking, well, as soon as I get out of here, I have to stop and make sure I do this and make sure I do this. So... It's cute, though, because when they give you the paperwork for the test, they say, dump your brain. And I thought to myself, oh, what a mess that's going to make.
Aww.
So So we'll, like I said, my family was like, "Mom, we have faith in you. You just get too nervous." And I said, "Oh, well, it is kind of nerve-wracking because you go behind a locked door, although the people that run it were adorable, very nice, very efficient, very professional. But, I mean, you feel like you're, you know, I don't know. It was, kind of intimidating."
Yeah, right, right.
So today, Monica couldn't join us, and I was, when I looked around this whole week about current events, which we haven't done in a while, I was very upset about one of the terrible stories that's out there. And I read the whole thing last night, and I shared it to my Facebook page. And I'd really, really like to read it to everybody today, and then we're going to talk about it. Because I, with all the work we've done with mental health, with all the work we've done with things that are happening out there in the world, and you shake your head and say, you know, what is the deal? What does this mean? What does this mean to us as a society? Two nights ago, I got a Facebook post from Jawara Sanders, who is the lady who's the director of NAVI, who it's about rights for homosexual teenagers, pretty much. And she's done a lot. And she shared some stories with me that are heart-wrenching and yet make you know that there's a lot of stuff out there going on to help everybody. So she posted a story the other night, right after dinner. She lives in Fort Lauderdale, and she was sitting out by her pool, you know, just relaxing, and a woman was beating the hell out of a little kid. And she posted on Facebook, you know, this little kid is yelling for somebody to help. So immediately you see all these posts come up from everybody, well, go help. You know, what are you doing? She says, I'm not sure what I should do. So in the meantime, she's taking action, but she posted all that. And she goes over and tells the lady to leave the child alone. The lady grabs her wig, tears it off of her head, and throws it on the ground. And in the meantime, Jawara had already called 911. So the cops show up, and then the next post is Jawara saying, I'm just sitting here watching the cops deal with her. It's his grandmother. And I guess the child was screaming and crying, and she was, like, hitting him and, you know, just going crazy. So I thought to myself, you know, there's a perfect example. 3 days before that, they showed a video where two girls jumped a girl in a mall, beat the hell out of her. And a lot of people, until finally somebody, I think like a security person at the mall, stepped in. But even they got hit by these two teenage girls. And other people just didn't watch or walked by. So it seems as though our anger and our indifference and our need to feel safe ourselves is taking a toll on how we react to other tragedies. Then I read this story, and I was like, how can this happen in a neighborhood where somebody has lived for more than 10 years and have something like this happen, and nobody knew it? How can nobody know that somebody gives birth to 7 babies, Shelley? 7 times 9 months is 63 months out of 10 years, which is what, like 3/4 of 10 years, right around there? About half, I guess, of 10 years, wouldn't it? Because 10 years would be 120 months, so say 63 months is like half of that. And nobody knew that this woman was doing this. At first, I thought it was just something that, you know, some of these sites put up, you know, just shocking stuff, and it's not true. You know, so this is with the Huffington Post, and of course the Huffington Post is one of those kind of papers that does a lot of, I mean, they're much worse than the Inquirer ever thought of being. But apparently there's some legitimacy to this story. So do you know about this? Have you seen this on the news? Uh-oh. I think I've lost Shelley. Let me get back to my dashboard. No?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah,
okay.
I had heard something on the news the other night, but I didn't actually see the report about they found infants in bags. I mean, babies in bags in this woman's home or something like that. I mean, you know, dead.
Yep, that's exactly right. And
yeah.
newborns.
Right.
There ended up being seven of them, but the seventh baby was born stillborn, according to the. The examiner, the medical examiner. So I'm going to read this. One of the things that made me feel like it was not a true story is the picture of the woman, because if you look it up online, I mean, this looks like, I don't know, it just looks like a photoshopped picture of somebody who's trying to look like they're a little bit loony or, you know, in some way mentally impaired. But it says, it's in Pleasant Grove, Utah. Megan Huntsman was clear about what she did with six of her newborn babies. Huntsman, 39 years old, told police she either strangled or suffocated them immediately after they were born. She wrapped their bodies in a towel or a shirt, put them in a plastic bag, and then packed them inside boxes in the garage of her home in a home south of Salt Lake City. What's not clear is why. A day after her arrest on charges of killing her six babies, investigators and neighbors puzzled over the grisly discovery, including how she could have concealed half a dozen pregnancies over a 10-year period. How can you have a baby and not have evidence and other people know? Ask neighbor Sandy Wall. You can't plan when a baby's going to come. Just the thought of somebody putting a baby into a box is a heartbreaker. Huntsman, who was arrested on Sunday on six counts of murder, was ordered held on $6 million bail, $1 million for each baby. The remains of a seventh baby police found appears to have been stillborn. According to a probable cause statement released by police Monday, Huntsman said she gave birth to at least seven babies between 1996 and 2006 at her former home in Pleasant Grove, a leafy, sleepy town about 35 miles south of Salt Lake City. All but one of the babies was born alive, she said. During the interview with police, she was unemotional and matter-of-fact, according to Pleasant Grove Police Lieutenant Britt Smith. Her estranged husband, Darren West, made the discovery Saturday with fellow family members while cleaning out the garage of the house, which is owned by his parents. He called Huntsman, who admitted to him it was her baby, according to court documents. West called the police, who then found the bodies in the garage. So she'd moved to another house. She's separated from her husband. But the story gets worse. Investigators believe Huntsman is the mother of them, all based on what she has told them, but have ordered DNA tests to make sure that's the case. They don't know who the baby's fathers are. It could take weeks to get the results, Utah County Attorney Jeff Booman said. Huntsman has three daughters, one teenager and two young adults, also lived in the house. Investigators believe West and Huntsman were together when the babies were born, but don't believe he was aware of the killings. Bowman said Huntsman is the principal suspect, but didn't rule out more arrests as the investigation continues. Police have talked with West as they investigate his level of knowledge and involvement in the deaths.
He was living in the house during the decade that authorities believe Huntsman had killed the babies. He's been cooperative and was devastated by the discovery. Smith said the three daughters have been interviewed, but he declined to discuss what they said. West pleaded guilty in federal court in 2005 to two counts of possessing chemicals intended to be used in manufacturing methamphetamine, according to court records. In August 2006, he was sentenced to 9 years in prison, but appealed three times. West was released from federal prison in California in January and transferred to a halfway house in Salt Lake City. During the Drug Enforcement Administration investigation in 2005, agents stopped by the house, spoke with Huntsman, and looked around, but it's unknown how extensive the search was. As he maintained his innocence, Huntsman wrote a letter asking a federal judge to consider leniency at sentencing. Darren is a remarkable man, husband, brother, son, son-in-law, friend, and father of our three beautiful daughters, she wrote. Please, we need this guy to keep our family together. Neighbor Sharon Chipman said the couple married young and Huntsman never worked except for a short stint at a grocery store. The three daughters who were living in the house were good young women who have turned out remarkably well considering their father has been in prison. West's parents have played an influential role in their upbringing, especially the youngest, who is still in junior high. Wall said she's puzzled about why Huntsman would have killed the babies, especially considering her youngest daughter, now a young teen, was born during the decade Huntsman told authorities she killed the other babies. Why was one of them saved? Neighbors said they noticed Huntsman's weight fluctuated over the years with her toggling between baggy and tight clothes, but they didn't realize she was pregnant. Cheryl Meyer, a psychology professor at Ohio's Wright State University, said some women who kill their children hide or deny their pregnancy and then dispose of the baby after it's born. Meyer said concealers are typically teenagers who do not repeat the act. These are usually girls who are 17, get pregnant, become scared to death, and don't want to tell their parents. This lady has written a book about mothers who kill their children. They're not 30-year-old women who can go and have an abortion, though. To combat this, states including Utah, have safe haven laws that allow women to drop off unwanted newborns to authorities with no questions asked. Florida does that as well.
Right.
The mother can remain anonymous as long as the child has not been subject to abuse or neglect. In coming days, attorneys for Huntsman are likely to closely examine her background to search for any evidence of mental illness or a family history that would help explain the alleged killings. There's a representative by the name of George Parman who represented Andrea Yates, the woman who drowned all of her kids in the bathtubs in 2001. We talked about her on one of the shows.
Oh, my goodness.
The defense attorneys also will try to determine whether Huntsman sought an abortion and if she told anyone about her pregnancies, all in hopes of understanding actions that otherwise appear incomprehensible. You start off with the very nature of what happened. Is there a rational motive, he said. So they also have pictures of the house, of the lawn. Everything looks normal. I think the reason I really, really wanted to talk about this is because I feel like we need to discuss how lost somebody has to be, and nobody knows, and how easy it is for a human being to pretend that that turmoil isn't going on in their head. So when we talk about mental illness and depression and all the things that we discuss on this show on a regular basis. Imagine, Shelley, imagine. I mean, we all live with secrets. We all live with things that we've done that we're not incredibly proud of. But certainly nothing like this. So let's try to put ourselves in the head of a woman who has three living children. Now, if she's 39 and she has two adult children, she must have started having kids when she was, what, 16? It doesn't say, but you have to make that assumption.
How old is her oldest child?
Say. It says one is still in junior high, and it says the other two are adults, young adults. So that would mean over 8.
Yeah, so she might have started when she was 16 or 17, something like that.
And, but, and to have and to be in a place where you can go and do something other than go through an entire pregnancy. They didn't say anything about any of the it sounds like, but it wasn't said, verbally wasn't said, but it sounds like all the babies came to full term. So that means you carry a baby for all those months. I mean,
I don't understand. I mean, for it to happen once is horrific enough that somebody could do that. But, you know, to have somebody give birth to a baby, not have the means to take care of it, panic, not try to think through, you know, that there's places that can help them. It's not understandable, but it's you know, at least you can wrap your brain around it a little bit, you know. But to go through this 6 times, which means now you're going full-length pregnancies, there's ways of preventing pregnancies, which means after the first time, you know, being pregnant is uncomfortable for us, for the female body. It's like, you know, so you go through all that work of being pregnant and the discomfort and the body changes and things like that, and then nothing at the end. I mean, it's like bizarre. It's horrific and bizarre at the same time because it makes absolutely no sense. Now, you said that her ex-husband had a meth lab. Is that, did I hear that right?
Yep. Apparently, back a few years ago, went back to my dashboard. Let me go back.
The reason I'm saying that is that I'm wondering if she ever used methamphetamines, because the articles I've read about what methamphetamines do to the brain is that even people that get clean and get off of it, they're pretty much permanently altered. Methamphetamines is very, very destructive to the brain and brain chemistry, more so than other drugs where, like cocaine and some other drugs, you come off of it, and over a period of time, you normalize. Methamphetamine does really, really severe damage to the brain, that even if you get clean, you're kind of permanently messed up. You know, the physical aberrations that methamphetamines cause, which are all the skin scabbing, and because they make you feel like your skin is crawling, so meth addicts are constantly picking at themselves until they actually make scabs all over their body. You know, so that type of stuff will clear up. They'll probably gain some weight again. But it doesn't, the functioning of the brain doesn't clear up. And I'm wondering, it just caught my attention that they said he had a meth lab. I'm wondering if she ever took any of the drugs he produced, because the woman who said, you know, please be lenient on this guy, he's a good guy, and for our three beautiful daughters, is not the same person that killed all these babies. It's like a duality of personality. It's not the same person.
Well, that's an interesting point of view, and I'll be honest, I didn't even go there because it says that that he pleaded guilty. The husband did, in federal court in 2005. That was 9 years ago. To 2 counts of possessing chemicals intended to be used in manufacturing methamphetamine. So it doesn't say they had a meth lab. It doesn't say that that's what they found in their home. It doesn't say any of those things. But
well, they might have been getting it from other sources. Maybe the reason they wanted to manufacture it is because they were getting it from other sources and saw how profitable it could be.
Mm-hmm. That could be. But
the whole connection there with the methamphetamine just got my attention, because that definitely alters you, and it alters you permanently, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that would certainly explain a lot. That would certainly give a little bit of an explanation. But I'm... See, 1996 to 2006 is when the babies were born, and 2006, at the end of that period, Shelley, you could be right. That could be exactly what happened. She might have been, on meth, and that, of course, would have put her in a whole different state, let alone mental illness or let alone depression or any of the other things. It could exactly have something to do with that. And it's
and
strange.
I'm wondering who the
they
father
don't have
is. Yeah, I'm wondering if it's going to be one father or multiple fathers of these kids. You know, was she promiscuous after her marriage broke up or you know, I mean, I'm curious as to whether or not any of the fathers knew she was doing this, if maybe they pressured her into doing this because they didn't want the baby. But then why didn't she just go for an abortion? I mean, if she was going to kill the baby anyway, why not abort it? I mean, there's so much to this story that's convoluted and confusing, because if obviously she never planned on having any of the kids, you know what I mean, because she did the same thing every time. So why go through the pregnancy? Why allow the baby to be born? Why not just get an abortion since they are available?
Well, like I say, during the time that she did it, he was still living with her, the husband.
Well, were they still married, or was he living there and they were divorced?
No, they're still married now.
Oh.
They're still married. He got,
oh, so they were just separated while he was incarcerated.
No. The babies were killed between 1996 and 2006 in the home that she lived in with him that belonged to his parents in Salt Lake City. And then he was arrested and put in jail in August of 2006. So since 2006 until now, she's lived in another home. The husband gets out of jail or prison to clean up the house for his parents, and they find a baby. And according to the story, he didn't know about any of this, but he was there the whole time. Now, so it is, I think, that the story that's going to come out is going to be a lot more sordid than just the obvious outcome of seven babies put to death. Well, six and one born stillborn. But, of course, the stillborn baby, after all of those babies, could have something to do if there was some drug use as well. But I would
guess... Has anybody looked at the property where she's living since 2006?
No, they don't say that they have. They don't say that they have. And
you know what? Why would anybody think that she would stop?
because there's no man in her life now. You know, so I would assume that that's part of it. Of course, I don't know how they would know that. If she could keep seven pregnancies a secret, she could certainly keep a man a secret. But I also find it interesting that they talk to the three daughters. And the youngest one, I can see why that can't become newsworthy, because the youngest one is a minor. But the two that are over 18, if there was you know, if there was an interview with them, which it says there was, but they declined to give any of that information to the public, I find that to be interesting, too. I mean, what if we find out that the daughters gave birth to some of the babies, too? I mean, you know, they lived in a house.
That was one of the things I thought of, that maybe these were incestual pregnancies, and, you know, that's why the father was, you know,
right,
claiming to be, like, not knowing anything about it. It's, I'm not saying that's what happened here, but that's a possibility. What if these were, because, you know, a young girl can get pregnant as early as 12, you know, 11 or 12 years old. The minute they start menstruating, they can get pregnant. And girls are starting their menstruation sometimes at 10 years old now. You know, and, you know, you hear things about where fathers get their daughters pregnant, you know, and then you have these young girls going through pregnancy, and they're not even teenagers yet. So that is a possibility that they could have been the product. That's why the DNA test is going to have to show, number one, are they her babies? You know, are they the daughter's babies, which then would point to the father, you know. This story is awful, is really awful. And there's so many unanswered questions right now. There's more questions than there is information at this point, because it's just,
there's so many
facts that don't make sense. They almost contradict each other.
Right. Right. Well, and like you just said, there's points that they make about the fact that they, even neighbors talking about them, that they married very young, that they did all this. You don't hear any negative stuff from any of the neighbors, which I also find to be amusing, since the neighbors are aware of the methamphetamines and all that kind of stuff. So I'd say that there's lots and lots of questions to be answered. But I also wonder if somewhere down the road there was involvement with all of the family. I'll tell you what, I realize that I'm a little bit more involved in all my kids' stuff than a lot of other people. I get that. But on the same token, if one of my daughter-in-laws or a grandchild or something, I want to tell you, I'd know they were pregnant. I don't care what they were wearing, I'd know they were pregnant. So, and if this family stuck together and helped with these kids, something's missing here. Something big is missing here, don't you think?
Well, but that's the other thing I was thinking about. But the husband is the one who called the authorities, right?
Well,
he found the baby, and then he called the authorities. And it wasn't it the police that found the other bodies?
Yes, but he called her. He called his wife and said, you know, this is what we found. And she said, yes, it's mine. But she also didn't give any more, I don't know, she may have given more information to him, but they didn't put this in the story. They just put in the story that she said, yes, it was hers, and then they went and searched the rest of the house and found six more babies. And according to what the preliminary, Did I read that she said the last one was born stillborn? Yeah, I think she's the one who told them that, because they didn't even make that decision. She said the last one was born stillborn.
All right. Well, I mean, there must be skeletal remains by now. I don't know that anybody would have been able to tell by looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think there'd be a way to know anything at this point in time other than the obvious, which is that they're deceased. But I don't know. I find the story to be, of course, obviously atrociously heartbreaking, and I have to wonder where everybody was during all this stuff. And I'm going to be interested to see how they deal with this when they find out what they find out. Because it just doesn't make sense to me that a woman that's in charge of a household with three other children could go through all this and hide everything and nobody knew. And the fact that they don't talk about what the two adult kids, I guess all girls, say, I find to be interesting too. And I think we're going to find out there's more up than this. But it brings me the biggest reason I wanted to talk about this is because of what you and I are going to be doing on the 25th, which is going someplace that is trying to make things better for the part of our world that suffers from anxiety, mental illness, depression, all those kind of things. These ailments, these problems are much bigger, I think, than anybody realizes. And very sadly, something happens to these people that you and I have talked about a million times we are against, which is medication and then continuing self-medication and prolonged use of psychotropic drugs to keep you in a decent place, what happens to a person's mind and their body, not just their mental, but their physical being when they have to be on all of these things from a very, very early age. And, of course, we've read stories from doctors, and we know personally from people that have talked to us about giving a child Ritalin or Adderall or one of those kind of things at a very early age and how it snowballs into more and more. And then self-medication, such as chewing the Adderall. All of these things are the kind of issues that our mental health associations are trying to do something about. But before they can really fix a problem, they have to really understand the problem. And I think that's where we fall short, because I think unless you're immersed in that world of mental illness, you really don't know. I mean, you and I can, you know, we can talk about it and hypotheses go a little ways, thinking about how you would feel. You can kind of like put yourself in somebody else's shoes and think, you know, like I get a visual, because I feel that way sometimes. I felt that way yesterday after that stupid test. There's so much in, you know, that I could have puked, literally. And,
Yeah, because that's a lot of technical knowledge. That's not stuff that generally lends itself to common sense, you know, or being able to just be able to think things through. That's technical knowledge, you know, numbers, figures, laws, statutes, things like that. So that's a different level of learning, you know, and it's I believe anybody can do it, but that's a different type of learning than just being able to common sense things out.
Well, and I think that if you are struggling with mental illness, you might feel that way all the time, Shelley. I don't know. What do you think? You think that you're always trying to sort out everything if you're struggling with mental illness? Do you think there's times of lucidity where you can actually get a grip on something? I mean, imagine, first of all, you've never given birth. And let me tell you, the act of giving birth all on its own is a beautiful, the emotions that you release when you actually give birth to a child are tremendous. They are tremendous. You cry. Some girls scream. It's very, very emotional. So now we have to imagine that this young woman did this all on her own, cleaned up the remains, which is after the baby's born, the umbilical cord is attached to the afterbirth, which is still has to be birthed, by the way. You get the rest of your child out of your belly, and you have to cut the umbilical cord. You have to dispose of the afterbirth. You have to, I mean, we're talking about, I realize we've read lots of stories about women that have delivered their own child or helped with the delivery and everything, and I think it's certainly possible. But what did it do the first time she did it? Did it get easier every single time and get to feel like it's something that's okay because she got away with it the first time, the second time, the third time, the fourth time, the fifth time, the sixth time? What could have been going through her head? I mean, all the emotions that are entangled in giving birth to a child all on their own are...
That's why it's like so confusing to me because, like you said, the connecting hormones that are created in the woman's body where she starts bonding with the baby and she gets excited when it moves around and, you know, by the time the baby's there, you've already bonded with this life for 9 months. So there's a major disconnect on her part. Number one, that she could be so emotionless to begin with that
mm-hmm.
she could have chosen to go full term on all the pregnancies knowing that she wasn't going to keep the baby. So why carry the life for all that time? You know, because it does change the body. I mean, it as beautiful, you know, an experience as it is, it's still uncomfortable. I mean, I know a lot of pregnant women that near the end they're like, oh my goodness, I can't wait for this baby to show up, you know, because it gets very uncomfortable near the end, you know. So it's really mind-boggling that she could choose to go full term. And like I said, one time, you know, it was a mistake and you panic and all that, but six times, seven times in a row to allow yourself to go full term, there's a major disconnect there. Never connected with any of these babies. And this is almost like premeditated murder. I mean, she thought about it for 9 months. Obviously, she'd already made the decision. So why? It's completely confusing. I don't even know how to analyze that.
Well, but it's interesting what you just said because, of course, that would have to be how it was interpreted as premeditated because there's also a million ways to protect yourself against pregnancy.
Exactly.
Forget the end of the pregnancy. If you are 30 years old and you've already given birth to three kids, you sure as hell ought to know how to keep yourself from getting pregnant. And after the first time, a relatively normal person who's high on methamphetamines does something atrocious like this and then sobers up and realizes what they've done, wouldn't a normal, you know, and I use the term normal loosely, but wouldn't a normal person take steps to never get pregnant again? I mean, wouldn't that be the first step towards some kind of normalcy, make sure you never get pregnant again after you've done something like that once. So
well, that's what I'm trying to explain. If she, and I don't know that she was, but if she was a methamphetamine user, the problem is you never get normal again. That's why people should never even try methamphetamine once. Some of the reports I read is that it's one of the most addictive drugs out there, and it's one of the ones that you can't use recreationally, because if you use it once, you're basically addicted to it. And it, you know, they're not all like that, but methamphetamine is, and unfortunately, it's so powerful in the way it alters brain chemistry that it does cause permanent damage to the brain. So if, in fact, she ever did mess with it, it could explain. Now, I've seen methamphetamine users that are actually pretty responsible, and they've gotten their lives together, but I've also read... More of the stories I've read is where they have, where it actually causes permanent brain damage. So I'm not saying it can never happen. I'm just saying in most cases it doesn't happen. In most cases, methamphetamine users are never quite right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I've always read as well here. I've always, in the stories that I research to talk about on the show and all that kind of stuff about drug use, and we've done a lot of shows about drug use. And methamphetamine, during the 90s, I want to say we're like at an all-time high. First of all, to make money. Second of all, to get high. And it seemed to be the I don't know, the poor man's way out of a bad place. And let's remember, they were living in his parents' home, so that tells you that there were issues with money. And, I mean, we'll never know exactly why, because she probably won't ever be able to articulate why she would do such a thing. Just like Andrea Tate, or whatever her name was, the one that they talk about in the story, the lawyer that's representing this young woman, when he represented her, trying to see if I find that part of it, so I'm saying the right, Andrea Yates, that's what her name was, the Texas woman who drowned her 5 children in a bathtub. That was in 2001. And obviously she was probably suffering from postpartum depression. And let's remember that that's a possibility too, when you have 6 babies in 10 years, that her depression could have been a big part of it. And then, of course, added in what she did after the fact that she gave birth to a child. I can't even put myself in a place like that. Usually I'm pretty good at, like, putting myself in somebody else's shoes and thinking about, you know, how this could affect them. And, yes, I can see how this would make you incredibly sad or mad or angry or something. I can't even think of what would make...
It's like trying to put yourself in the mind of a serial killer that mutilates somebody's body. I mean, there are certain acts that are so aberrant that any normal person isn't going to be able to wrap their brain around it. And, you know, you try to think of a serial killer, and that the fact that this is some sort of a compulsion for them where they need to kill, they need to take the life from somebody, and then on top of that, they need to do things to the body that are just gruesome. You know, how do you wrap your brain around that? You're never gonna understand. It's too aberrant for a normal person's brain to even comprehend. And this is kind of where I'm falling into with her. It's too extreme. It's too out there for any normal person to really understand. And like I said, part of it is because I think we're missing a lot of facts. There's just too many missing pieces of this puzzle, so you're looking at a picture that you can't even really know what the true picture is right now because there's too many missing pieces from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, you know, there were... I also have to wonder about the girls, the young girls, because young girls... usually keep a pretty close eye on mom. I found another story, and it has a few different quotes. Huntsman's 3 daughters still live in the home. Longtime neighbor talked to the Salt Lake Tribune. The oldest were about 18 to 20 years old, while the youngest was about 13, she said. Huntsman was a great neighbor, and they trusted her to watch this neighbor trusted her to watch their grandson.
Wow.
Good care of him. She was good. This really shocks me. One of the policemen that did the case said it was emotionally draining and upsetting to investigators. He was at the home when the bodies were discovered. My personal reaction, just shocked. Couldn't believe it. The other officers felt the same. They got more and more shocked with each box that they opened.
Wow.
It is, you know, it is pretty bad. But I don't know, Shelley. There's something here that just isn't, I suppose, once we know more. I tried to see if there's any news stories. There isn't yet. But I will keep an eye on this and see if we can, you know, find out more in the weeks to come.
So when did this actually happen? Are we talking a week ago, longer than that? When was the discovery actually made by the police?
Well,
it's a true story, but I don't know. I mean, I know that everything happened up till 2006, but when was the discovery actually made?
Saturday. This past Saturday.
Oh, so it hasn't even been a full week. All right, so it is that news. Oh, sorry, yeah. Okay, yes. I'm just trying to figure out, because it usually takes a few weeks for other facts to start trickling out to the media.
That's why I thought I might find another story, and I may today. I might get right into the Huffington Post and see if they've posted anything else, and if they have, I'll share it on tomorrow's recap show. But I think it's important for us to realize, like I said, because you and I are taking a special interest in the mental health arena. And, of course, we know that a lot of times everybody is born okay, and their lifestyle is what brings them to that place, but sometimes people are born with a missing link or two and are at that place already. And one of the things that needs to happen, of course, is that we need to regulate how that is handled, because it's happening more and more every day. And sometimes it's a child who's born to a mom and a dad who have had lots of drug use. I tend to not go so much with the alcohol, although I've seen proof that it's true, but I struggle with the fact that my mom drank like a fish when she gave birth to not me and Barbara, but by the time, or even Joey for that matter, very much, but certainly Patty and Danny and Lisa Marie, she drank all the time. She wasn't a whiskey drinker in those days. She was a beer drinker, but you look at old movies, and it was nothing to see a pregnant woman, you know, with a martini in her hand from the bar that was kept in the living room. You remember those days in those movies?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And we didn't have the same kind of problems. I think, and this is right up your alley, Shelley, I think the difference is the chemicals. I think the chemicals that are used to design a lot of the designer drugs out there are what, I mean, the drug itself, the upper, the downer, the pain reliever, whatever it is you're taking, it's the chemicals that they put into them, like methamphetamine. I mean, everything that goes into methamphetamine is dangerous all on its own, practically.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's in a natural state, of course, and we've discussed this before, and we'll probably be discussing this again soon, because as the laws change here in the state of Florida, is marijuana. Marijuana is grown, and unless they're lacing it with other things to make more money or to get better results, or I don't quite understand that part of it. I suppose I could research and enlighten myself a little bit more, but marijuana is at least, in most cases, chemical free. So I really
well,
think
no, that's not true. That's not true, because the active ingredient that grows in the plant, I'm not talking about what's added to it, the active
okay.
ingredient that makes you high that's in pot plants, you know, if you were just to take it and smoke it on your own, does alter brain activity, and it thickens the sheath around the brain neurons, I forgot the name of it, so that over time it's hard for the brain neurons to communicate with each other. And that's why people that smoke pot on a regular basis start having issues with memory, they become apathetic because they can't connect the dots. They can't really analyze how what they're doing over here is affecting on what happens over there, that kind of thing. So in that particular regard, when you're talking about brain chemistry, pot is not a safer. It may not be hallucinogenic and things like that or make people violent, but it certainly does affect it on a personal level and just being able to function on a normal basis. So, so that's not true. The other thing about the alcohol during pregnancy, although I tend to agree with you, that as far as what you're talking about, like defects that are caused from chemically altering the DNA, I don't believe that drinking can do that. But what being an alcoholic during pregnancy can lead to is disorders caused by malnutrition, because malnutrition can cause certain types of birth defects that can affect the brain activity of the baby. And that's why it's dangerous, because somebody who's an alcoholic who drinks too much usually doesn't have a very good diet. So the baby suffers from...
Now, you're talking about two different things. Okay, but let's don't mix those up. I didn't say alcoholics. I said people who drank. I didn't say an alcoholic. I said people who had wine with dinner, people who had a Manhattan or a martini when they got home from work. That was very prevalent when my mother was a young woman and carried all of me, my sisters, and brothers. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about alcoholism. That's another story, because you're right.
Oh, okay.
Alcoholics don't take care of themselves, for sure. And that's what leads to cirrhosis of the liver and all the other things that go with it. I don't mean that. I just mean, you know, social drinking was acceptable.
Right, right. So, social drinking, right.
I have a glass of red wine every night when I was pregnant with David.
Yep.
You know, so, but... The point though that I'm making, and so you're telling me that in grown marijuana that you grow in your own yard, there's already a chemical in the marijuana?
Yes, yes. Marijuana, without adding anything to it, it already contains, I forgot what TCH or something like that, because people find ways of growing it that have more of an intensity of that chemical. That's what gets you high. They don't add things to marijuana. If that was the case, you could take anything you grow and add the stuff that makes you high to it. It's in the marijuana already. That's why it's illegal to grow it, because the crop itself contains the brain-altering ingredients.
Okay, but... And you're calling it a chemical.
Right. It is a chemical, but it's a chemical. It's a chemical in the plant, though.
Hmm.
It's a natural chemical. It's not a synthesized chemical.
Okay. So this is confusing for me. I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to research this.
And it's man-made.
That marijuana, opium, is a plant too, and it's. A lot more, it's a lot stronger, a lot more, what's the word I want, has a bigger effect on somebody. Opium is how they make heroin. I have made up a new drug, Shell. Heroin. That would be heroin
and
marijuana together.
Most drugs are plant-based. Most drugs are plant-based.
But not things like methamphetamine, right?
Well, no, but methamphetamine is right, but that's made from cooking other, like, over-the-counter type of products, of drugs. But when you're
mm-hmm.
talking about heroin and opiates and pot and stuff, that's all plant-based. But it still creates a chemical reaction in the body,
and it still
has chemicals in it.
But isn't a chemical reaction different? Chemical? You're confusing me, honey. We're going to have another show about this so that we really understand everything. I because I really want to understand it, and I really want to help people figure out why, if they've got something like this going on in their family. And we have somebody very close to us who calls in frequently and things like that who's struggling with all of this right now. I think understanding the issues of learning how to deal with them. So, but we're out of time. I hope this story wasn't too upsetting for all of you today. I think that it is a horrible thing, but, you know, it's what's going on in the world today. So we'll be back tomorrow and do a recap. If anybody has any input that they'd like to give us, I know I have a lot of listeners who are pro-marijuana, especially health. So if you want to call in tomorrow and talk about that, we'd love it. 347-989-0352. But we are gone for today, so everybody go out there and have a great day, and we'll be back tomorrow. God bless, everybody. Thanks, Shell. Sorry
bye,
about
Irene. Bye, everyone. Have a great day.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.